for antiwar.com and Chaos Radio 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton, and this is Anti-War Radio.
Yo, move on to the battlefield, get the black mind back.
They just hope that he'll never wake up, because they never want to meet him on the battlefield.
War, third, three in the third, haven't you heard? I got quick, gay, clever, at the level of a scientist, with this, list, my fist, pump, jump, and don't miss. So I'm a dog, he grudge against the enemy and any other nigga with an attitude, see? And any other rapper who's a brother trying to speak to one another, get smothered by the other, kind, not so divine. So I heard through the grapevine, said the feds out to get my time. Yo, yo, to go pro to a 90-91 level, while they're searching for my 90 to accelerate the race, from the chase. Look at my face and they hate, but they don't want it to face. It ain't great, can I live my life without them treating every brother like me, like I'm holding a knife for right time. A smack who's the same, I don't give a damn. Look at the flag, a blood to blood without credit, black and close to the edit. I bet it, you read it, just remember who said it.
Public enemy's leader,
Chris Standish.
Chris
Standish.
Chuck D.
Chris
Standish.
Welcome to Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. And, you know, if you want to find out what the hell's going on in the world, you should look at antiwar.com, your best place for all the news from all the credible news sources all around the world on every topic of large-scale violent conflict between states, within states, what have you. It's all there on the front of the page at antiwar.com. I'm an assistant editor there, and I post all my interviews in the Anti-War Radio section right there at the top of the page at antiwar.com. You can also find them all at my own archive page, scotthortonshow.com. Must be, I don't know, nearly 300-something interviews there by now, maybe more than that. I don't really know. Oh yeah, and my blog is thestressblog.com, so stop by there if you like to, read blogs and stuff. That's thestressblog.com. And, by the way, if you're driving in your car and you're thinking, wow, this is such great radio I'm hearing right now, then, you ought to know that you can go inside and go to KAOS959.com. And stream it live, and you can send the link to your pen pal on the other side of the world, and they can listen to. And I guess one more website, libertystickers.com, particularly the Scott Horton section there. I made up almost all the stickers on the site, except the ones that suck. Those aren't mine, I disavow them. But I made up pretty much most of the rest of them. But the ones in the Scott Horton section, I still get a little bit of a royalty off of those. And I've come up with about 70-something new stickers that I turned over to the girl to make the art good instead of terrible. And hopefully all those will be up on the page at libertystickers.com before too long. That's the Scott Horton section there, anti-government propaganda for the back of your car. And that's the end of that. And now, wow, I hope everybody had a great time yesterday blowing up firecrackers and celebrating the Great Secession from the British Empire. I had a hell of a time. I went out to Round Rock, and it was like a battlefield, only without all the screaming and, dying people and grief and pain. But man, there were fireworks going off everywhere. Those artillery shells. And, I got some pretty good ones, too. I could have got the $60 package and got a bunch of artillery shells, but I kind of went a little bit lower scale than that. But I still did pretty good. Spent about 25, 30 bucks, something like that, and got a pretty good score of firecrackers there. And like they say on The Simpsons, celebrate the independence of your country by blowing up a small piece of it. Well, that's exactly what we did yesterday, and it was great. And I hope everybody had a good time celebrating the Great Secession. I got this blog entry here by Butler Schaefer on lourockwell.com. Butler Schaefer, friend of the show. And he blogged this yesterday at lourockwell.com. Peace is not patriotic. Butler Schaefer says, I see any number of people who try to straddle the line between their peaceful, humane sentiments and the vicious demands of statism by decorating their cars with bumper stickers that read, Peace is patriotic. As I stated in an earlier article, peace and patriotism are diametrically opposed concepts. Patriotism is a love or devotion to one's country. This makes a self-proclaimed patriot an easy mark for political forces that want to set his country, e.g. the U.S., against other countries, e.g. Iraq, Iran. If you love your country, so the song and dance goes, you'll support the wars, boycotts, etc. directed against these other countries. Patriotism provides the energy that keeps statism alive. If war is the health of the state, patriotism is the tonic that keeps the state robust. Lou Rockwell's reference to the South Carolina GOP official who wants to keep Ron Paul out of his county is a prime example of this symbiotic relationship. Republicans and Democrats alike implicitly realize that the capacity to inflict massive death and destruction upon innocent, helpless people is what keeps the state vibrant. If peace was to suddenly break out in the world and infect the United States, such that its war machinery and conflict manipulations would no longer have meaning, being elected to high office in Washington would have no more meaning than being a county commissioner in Kansas or South Carolina. The South Carolina GOP official need not worry about Ron Paul as much as for the future of his own criminal syndicate. As Justin Raimondo pointed out in his antiwar.com article of July 2nd, the Republican Party has destroyed itself. Ron Paul is not so much the lunatic that this GOP leader imagines, as he is the phoenix rising from the burned-out remains of a party that has no principles other than that of acquiring and exercising as much violent power as it can. Peace is incompatible with all of this. Patriotism divides people into warring groups, while peace is indivisible. A peaceful disposition cannot be turned on and off at will. Patriotism, on the other hand, is a history of loving and hating those other countries identified by the fleeting interests of those in power. In American history, Great Britain, the Soviet Union, China, Japan, Germany, Italy, Mexico, and Spain have been identified while our friends. While Great Britain, the Soviet Union, China, Japan, Germany, Italy, Mexico, and Spain have been labeled our enemies. Is there a message in all this? If you remain uncertain, reread Charles's blog, and then I forget which blog was Charles's that he's referring to there. But anyway, that's peace is not patriotic. Butler Schaefer on the blog at lourockwell.com. And, you know, he's basically right. I mean, I consider myself a patriot, and I love my country, but certainly not in the way that someone can twist me into being a war supporter. By, you know, manipulating my emotions. And, you know, really the reason I love this country is because of the promise that this is the land of individual liberty. That's what to love about America. I mean, if we had a bunch of brown shirts goose-stepping down the street, I guess you'd still love your country then and want to save it from the goose-steppers. But the point is, if this was a 12-year Reich or whatever reigning in the Americas, which we're getting there, then that really wouldn't be worth loving, would it? No, what's worth loving is not just the land and your neighbors, but the liberty that supposedly comes with being an American. That's kind of part of the deal. It's supposed to just kind of come with the package, you know. Anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah. And speaking of patriotism and the 4th of July, listen, would you please, to this very short soundbite of George Bush from his speech in West Virginia, I think, yesterday.
Instead, the president spoke of a war that was won, the nation's long and bloody war for independence.
More than 2 decades later, it is hard to imagine the Revolutionary War coming out any other way.
Okay, and now, so here's my thing here. I've discussed this with a couple of friends. And basically, we came to the conclusion that there's probably, maybe even approaching 10%. Let's call it 5% of the American population that really can't tell you the difference between a decade and a century. Who don't know which one is which. And yet, this is the president of the United States. This isn't just some dumbass, you know, filling up your fountain drink at the drive-thru window. This is the president of the United States. Referring to the Revolutionary War as 2 decades ago? The hell is he talking about? The invasion of Grenada? The supporting the death squads down there in Nicaragua? 2 decades after the Revolutionary War, we can look back and say that it couldn't have gone any other way. And isn't that funny that that's the best comparison that George Bush can try to come up with? That's the best parallel that he can tell these National Guardsmen and their families? You know, the Iraq War is a lot like the Revolutionary War. And that is that, well, you know, the end was uncertain for a time. What? Pardon me. The end in Iraq is certain already. At least in terms of whether America will have a victory or not. America just is exactly as Scott Ritter predicted out loud on TV in front of people with a straight face before the war ever broke out. America will leave Iraq eventually with our tail between our legs, humiliated in defeat. That is an inescapable fact. Really, I mean, in time and space, you could use like a ruler or maybe like bounce some radio waves off it or something and measure the fact that there will be no victory of conquering the Iraqi people. And we can occupy their land for a while longer, perhaps. But as far as actually ruling that place, I'm here to tell you, kids, it's July 2007. And the war started in March of 2003, and they have yet to secure the capital city of Baghdad, okay? They never secured it. Not for one day did they secure Baghdad. It's not that they secured it and then lost it again. They never even secured the capital city after all this time. So, yeah, it's not really in question whether America can win in Iraq. But of course, the obvious analogy to the Revolutionary War is that America and the British are the redcoat occupying army of foreigners who have come to murder and dominate the locals. That's right. Our guys are the redcoats in Iraq. That is the obvious analogy. And now, that doesn't make Muqtada al-Sadr Thomas Jefferson, but it does make King George, King George. And it does make our soldiers on the ground over there an occupying imperial army. They're not a liberating force there to provide security. They are an occupying army of colonialist oppressors. And the best analogy that George Bush can come up with on the 4th of July is that, well, you know, for a time there in the Revolutionary War, they weren't sure if they were going to win either. And now, after two decades, we can look back at the Revolutionary War and, you know, have a little bit better perspective on it there. Two decades. The President of the United States. And, you know, I screw up. I say the wrong thing sometimes. Usually I catch myself. But there are times when I mean to say solder and I say Almaty and I don't even notice. And I go, oh, shit. Did I just say Almaty? Sometimes I don't even notice. Sometimes I listen to the recording and say, oh, crap. I just said 1876 when I meant 1976. How the hell, first of all, did I make that mistake? And second of all, how did I not notice that I made that mistake when I made it? It happens. I don't think I've ever confused a decade for a century. And I'm not sure that what George Bush did yesterday was just one of those things where, you know, you just accidentally switch a word kind of thing. I think he was, you know, knew what he was saying, thought that he was making sense. Here we are 2 decades after the Revolutionary War, according to the President of the United States, who doesn't know what a decade is. And, you know, the funny part is a friend of mine pointed out that, you know, there were probably a certain percentage of Americans who heard that speech yesterday and thought to themselves, oh, here all this time I thought a 100-year period was called a century. Apparently I've had it wrong all this time, and now George Bush has corrected me. 100 years is a decade. There must be a certain percentage of people who, you know, learned wrong from George Bush yesterday. And I just think that's funny. I think that all the people, and admit it if you're one of them, all the people who said, well, yeah, it's true that George Bush is an absolute fucking retard asshole, but he's got really good, smart people around him, like Dick Cheney and, you know, Henry Kissinger and Paul Wolfowitz and really great advisors like that. Remember that? Remember when you parroted that? Like a little parroting puppet in 2000, remember? Yeah, it was you, don't lie. I don't know how many people told me, well, yeah, the guy really is absolutely as dumb as he could possibly be. He is in no way qualified whatsoever to be the President of the United States. He's the legacy spot. That's all he is. But he's surrounded by really good people like Dick Cheney and some real grown-ups. Remember that? Yeah, boy, oh boy. If that was you, then I guess, you know, I accept your apology. What were you thinking? Actually, you know what's funny? That's why I supported George Bush in 2000. Well, I didn't really support him. Obviously, I voted for Harry Brown. I never voted for George Bush. In fact, my very first vote in my life was against George Bush when he first ran for governor of this great state. Well, this great land within these borders that somebody drew. There's nothing great about the state in Texas. But I actually figured, well, I guess if I absolutely had to choose only between Bush and Gore, then I guess I would choose Bush because he's a clown. He's a complete idiot. You listen to him talk, if you couldn't see his face, you'd think he had Down syndrome. No offense if anybody's family's got Down syndrome out there. God, I'm going to piss some people off. But the guy's an absolute clown. And I thought, oh, good, finally a clown for president. Because, you know, I guess a lot of people had as much trouble taking Bill Clinton seriously in the same way I did. But for the most part, Clinton was pretty slick, you know. You tell him, hey, the Chinese gave you millions and millions of dollars and then you changed all the licensing to make it really easy for Lockheed and the boys to send them all our best missile technology for their 3-stage intercontinental rockets. What the hell? And Ron Paul looked right in the camera, not miss one beat, looked right in the camera and answered right back, I don't think you can find any evidence of the fact that I ever changed policy solely due to a campaign contribution, and on and on and on like that. And I thought, well, good, George Bush can't do that. The best Bush can come up with is, I guess we're going to bomb them. And I thought, well, you know, since Bush is a child as compared to, you know, the American population, he'll be a very weak president, and that's what I want. Of course, September 11th changed all that. But really, literally, here we are. And, you know, it's easy for people to dislike the founders. The vast majority of them literally owned or claimed ownership over other human beings. I got a problem with that, too. Believe it or not. It's easy to pick out tremendous flaws in the founders of this country. But if anyone ever reads anything ever written by even the worst of them, Hamilton, John Adams, you would never get the idea that this guy could mistake a decade for a century. You know, you get the impression that these guys at least were educated and intelligent and were interested. How disinterested in the world do you have to be to not know what a goddamn decade is? That means 10 years, not 100, dumbass. How insulated does a human mind have to be? Or how pickled? It's like I saw the great bumper sticker. I wish I had made this one up. George W. Bush, not a crackhead anymore. And a lot of good it did him quitting. And I'm sorry, that's probably just a damn waste of a radio show to just sit here and insult the intelligence of the President of the United States. To get, you know, right to the point. The guy's a murderer and a torturer and a kidnapper and a liar and a wager of aggressive war. And he ought to be locked in cage until he dies. He ought to be locked in a cage 23 hours a day. Like the rest of them. And honestly, you know, I think if a jury actually sentenced him to death for his war crimes, I wouldn't object to that other than, you know, tactical reasons. Setting off the 26% brown-shirted fascist, idiot, southern, born-again crazies who want to force Jesus to come back and appoint Bush dictator for life. It would just give them, you know, that much more to backlash against. But if a jury, under the Bill of Rights, you know, if a grand jury indicted him, and a U.S. attorney prosecuted him, and the jury convicted him and sentenced him to death, and his appeals were exhausted, then I wouldn't have any real objection. The guy's a torturer. Who cares if he doesn't know the difference between a decade and a century? Boy, waste of 15 minutes complaining about how stupid the president is, when what I should have been complaining about is what a torturer he is. You know, and Nat Hentoff, who I have a lot of respect for, was interviewed by Charles Goyette the other day and said, yeah, George Bush just has these terrible lawyers. Oh, really? Yeah, when my terrible lawyers came to me and told me that I was completely and totally above the law and I can kidnap and torture whoever I want, well, I just got bad legal advice. Pardon me if I have a little bit of trouble swallowing that. You know, honestly, I've never read the War Crimes Act of 1996. I guess I should put that on my reading list. But still, if you told me, hey, Horton, here, you know, we got the unitary Horton theory that says that you can torture whoever you want, I'd be disinclined to believe you or to act on your recommendation, even if I did believe you. So, you know, the idea that somehow Bush is not absolutely and totally and completely responsible for his own actions and behavior is just, I don't know why he deserves to have punches against him pulled like that. Doesn't sound right to me. Sounds right to me that the guy's a torturer and belongs in a cage like an animal. But anyway, here we are, two decades after the American Revolution, and we can look back and see how it's just like Iraq. Yeah. Let's see here. More news. Body count. Washington Post. body count in Baghdad up in June. Nearly 5 months into a security strategy that involves thousands of additional U.S. and Iraqi troops patrolling Baghdad, the number of unidentified bodies found on the streets of the capital was 41% higher in June than in January, according to unofficial health ministry statistics. During the month of June, 453 unidentified corpses, some bound, blindfolded, and bearing signs of torture, were found in Baghdad, according to more data provided. And look, that is the signature, and it has been, hey, innocent till proven guilty, right? But what the hell? That's been the signature of the Badr Brigade. This is, again, the Iranian parties, the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq, or whatever they want to call themselves now. It's their private army, the Badr Brigade, that's going around kidnapping Iraqis, particularly members of the Sunni insurgency, and torturing them to death, and leaving their bodies on the side of the road. Now, that doesn't mean all of them, but that has been the signature of the El Salvador option, the American decision 3 years ago, 4 years ago, almost, to hire the Shiite death squads to fight the Sunni insurgency. During the month of June, 453 unidentified corpses, some bound, blindfolded, and bearing signs of torture, were found in Baghdad, according to more data provided by a health ministry official who spoke on condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to release the information. In January, 321 corpses were discovered in the capital, a total that fell steadily until April, but then rose sharply over the last 2 months, the statistics show. Overall, the level of violent civilian deaths in Iraq is declining, according to U.S. military and health ministry statistics. And there has been a steady drop in fatalities from mass casualty bombings that have torn through outdoor markets, university bus stops, and crowds assembled to collect food rations. But the number of unidentified bodies found on the street is considered a key indicator of the malignancy of sectarian strife. That is, of the criminality of the Iran parties that America has installed in power in Iraq and insists on backing against every other faction. While the declining number of bombing victims suggests that efforts to control violence are showing some success, the daily slayings of individuals in aggregate speak to an enduring level of aggression. That's the cancer that keeps eating the neighborhoods, General David H. Petraeus, the top U.S. military commander in Iraq, said at a meeting with reporters Saturday. It never stops. It's a tit for tat. It's a cycle of violence that has to be broken. I found somebody dumber than George Bush. David Petraeus. Dumber than Bush. That's a pretty good slogan. I hope that when David Petraeus dies, and I hope, well, I'll leave out the second part of that sentence. I hope that when he dies, someone will go and chisel that on his tombstone. David Petraeus. Dumber than Bush. Gotta break the cycle of violence in Iraq, huh? And you're gonna do that with what? The Marines? Who believes that? Raise your hand. Do you think the American government is going to somehow use the Marines to break the cycle of violence in Iraq? Or perhaps, you know, you're partial to the local state guard units that are over there serving their quote-unquote 2 weeks. Maybe you think they will be able to break the cycle of violence, huh? Probably all we got to do, guys, is occupy Iraq a little bit more, and it'll get better. And the fact that it's done nothing but get worse this whole time, the fact that there are 4 million people been displaced from their homes, the fact that America is now backing the Sunni insurgency against Al-Qaeda that we backed the death squads against, driving them into the arms of Al-Qaeda in the first place. And whatever, dude. Anyway, all I know is if you break somebody's pottery, you have to fix it before you leave the thing. Yeah, you know what? If you smash pottery, you're not going to glue that back together. You pay and you go. I mean, what the hell? We're spending $10 billion a month there. $10 billion a month in Iraq. So, I don't know. Why not write everybody in Iraq a check for $500,000? It's not like our government doesn't do anything but sit around counterfeiting money all day anyway. That's what you do. To break the cycle of violence in Iraq, send all the Marines door to door to give everybody $500,000 each and then get on planes and go. We're so very sorry that we might as well have dropped a nuclear goddamn bomb on your country for as much damage as we've done here. Here's $500,000 apiece. It doesn't make up for what we've done, but hopefully it'll help get you guys back on your feet and headed the right direction to solving your own problems. Terribly sorry for electing a half-wit retard who doesn't know the difference between a decade and a century to be the President of the United States. And so very sorry for being a minor bird and parroting what TV says when TV says that, well, yes, George Bush is a retard, but at least he's got grown-ups like Dick Cheney there to help him out. Terribly sorry. Here's $1 billion we were going to waste killing you all. We'll just give it to you cash and go. That's the Pottery Barn rule, if you want to go by your little Pottery Barn rule. Which, in fact, they contacted, some intrepid reporter finally contacted the Pottery Barn, and they said, we don't have a rule like that. If you break our pottery, you know, we would think it would be nice for you to pay for the pot you broke. But what, we're going to try to hold you there? Call the cops on you? No. They don't have a break it, you buy it policy at the Pottery Barn. They never did. So talk about a false premise on top of a false premise on top of mass murder, unending slaughter, humanitarian catastrophe. You know, you can't smell the burning bodies from here, but, you know, I'd be surprised if you couldn't smell them in Jordan and Syria. But anyway, you know, I guess I'll just speak for all the rest of you. What do I care? This is Chaos Radio 95.9 Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton, and that was the Dumb Misfits. The phone number here is 512-646-6446. I guess I could have thought of giving out the number at the top of the hour. It's a radio show. It's got a telephone. Completely slipped my mind. Give me a call, 512-646-6446. So here we are, two decades, according to the President of the United States, after the American Revolution, and we've turned our country into the British Empire, only without even the pretense of class, as we slaughter innocent civilians unendingly. Not that I ever considered the British Empire's pretense of class impressive or anything, but at least they gave it a shot. Scooter Libby. Scooter Libby's a small part of America's descent to empire. He's just one little character. You know, if this was Star Wars 2 and the would-be dictator standing around in his office with all the loyalists standing around, Libby, he's one of the aliens in the background who you don't know his name till you buy the action figure. He's one of those guys in the background. Just a small part. But a very important part. And, in fact, if I can stick with the stupid Star Wars analogy for a minute, there's a great article by Robert Perry where he called Iraq Bush's Alderaan. Remember when the Imperials blew up Princess Leia's planet? She lied to him, said, oh, the rebel base, it's over on Dantooine. And they said, well, Dantooine is too remote to make an effective demonstration. Don't worry, I'll kill them soon enough, but first I'm going to go ahead and blow up your planet, which will, in fact, be an effective demonstration. And I think the analogy holds perfect for, but there's no targets to bomb in Afghanistan. What are you supposed to do, just bomb rocks all day? Yeah, never mind actually bombing Osama bin Laden, who's still alive and well. But there's no good targets, the Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld complained. There's basically nothing but rubble in Afghanistan to bomb. You're talking about going to war with the town of Bedrock. Afghanistan is too remote to make an effective demonstration. So we got to blow up Alderaan and make an example. We got to invade Iraq and show people what it means to oppose the evil American empire. Funny thing is, the Iraqis are kicking our asses a lot like Luke Skywalker and the boys kicked the ass of their empire a long, long time ago. So that effective demonstration, you know, it's really just like Princess Leia called it. The more you tighten your grip, the more slip through your fingers. And that's the way it goes. And so, but how did this happen, though? Because it wasn't just the word of the Grand Moff to invade Iraq. They had to convince the American people. They wouldn't admit that America's an empire. They had to call it democracy. They had to call it liberty and freedom. As though we were invading Iraq in celebration of American independence. And there was a criminal conspiracy to get that job done. It was a plot to lie to you, to lie to your mom and dad, your cousins and uncles and aunts, your friends and neighbors, and make you think that Iraq, was a threat to the United States of America. That they had programs to develop germ and chemical weapons and nuclear weapons. We do believe that he has, in fact, reconstituted nuclear weapons. As though we ever had them in the first place, said Dick Cheney. And these were lies. And see, that's a crime, to lie a country into an aggressive war. That's what Hitler did. He had his own soldiers attack his own soldiers and claimed that it was the Poles who attacked Germany. That's not okay. There were guys hung from their necks for that at the end of World War II. Of course, none of the most responsible people, they all got jobs working for John Foster and Alan Dulles. But that's neither here nor there. It's a war crime to start an aggressive war. And that's not just international law. That's not a United Nations resolution of global federalism, which, of course, I oppose. This is basic handshake agreement, Geneva Convention stuff. The laws of nations, not the laws of nations interfering with the affairs of individuals or private entities, but the laws of nations that govern how they are to deal with each other. It's not okay to start an aggressive war. And in fact, there are American laws, constitutional American laws, that say that it's a crime, a federal felony to violate the Geneva Convention under the color of law of the United States government. That's were passed by Republican Congress in the 1990s. The War Crimes Act. Bill Mad Bomber Clinton, instigator of aggressive warfare himself, signed it. It's a crime to lie this country into war, specifically. You know, maybe I should have gone to law school and lied and spent the last, 15 years of my life lying and pretending I love government just so I could be a federal prosecutor and convene a grand jury. Outing a CIA agent, who cares about that? Scooter Libby is a war criminal. He should be indicted for war crimes. He should be facing life in a cage. Oh, what the hell are you talking about, Horton? Well, Libby was Cheney's Cheney. What Cheney is to Bush, that's what Libby is to Cheney. That's how the metaphor goes, or the simile, or however you call it. Libby's the guy who helps Cheney get his most evil things done. Was. And he was also a special assistant to the President of the United States. And he's a longtime member of the War Party. He's a guy that's convinced that what's good for Israel is good for America, and that if what's good for Israel isn't good for America, well, then screw you. Send your son over there to die anyway. And he's closely tied with the military-industrial complex. Of course, all the neoconservative think tanks like AEI and so forth. And I'm not sure which all ones he's a member of. I guess I should have reread his right web profile this morning. But the point is that if you read Agents of Influence or The Lie Factory by Robert Dreyfus, the former in The Nation, the latter in Mother Jones Magazine, if you read Pentagon Home Office to Neocon Network by Jim Loeb, if you read Selective Intelligence and Stovepipe by Seymour Hersh, if you listen to the, I don't know what else to call it, testimony of retired Lieutenant Colonel in the U.S. Air Force, Karen Katowski, about what was going on with the Neocon cabal in the run-up to war, then you know that Scooter Libby was the receiving end of the stovepipe. The CIA and the Mossad, it turns out, refused to come up with good enough lies to justify the war. And so Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney created the Office of Special Plans in the Pentagon. And Ariel Sharon created his own little Office of Special Plans in the Prime Minister's office in Israel. And from these two offices, they lied. They lied. Saddam trying to buy uranium from Niger. Saddam training Al-Qaeda how to hijack airplanes, sending his intelligence guys to meet with Mohammed Atta in Prague, Czechoslovakia before the war. Etc., etc. Ad infinitum. And what they did was they came up with all these lies and then they funneled them straight to Scooter Libby in the vice president's office. And this whole Valerie Plame this and that all comes from the fact that Scooter Libby, George Bush, and Dick Cheney engaged in a criminal conspiracy to violate federal law. It's a, pretty stupid and unnecessary law if you ask me. Protecting the identity of covert CIA agents, but it is a law, and of course, dumb laws apply to you and me, whether they're any good or not, and so it seems to me that they ought to apply to the people at the highest levels of enforcing those laws, the executive branch of the United States government. But George Bush, Dick Cheney, Scooter Libby, and others engaged in a criminal conspiracy to reveal the identity of a covert CIA operative named Valerie Plame, in an effort to embarrass her husband by trying to claim that his trip to Niger, in which he debunked the preposterous idea that somehow Saddam Hussein was attempting to buy 500,000 tons of yellow cake uranium from a French company in Niger. I forgot how I started this sentence for how to finish it in the proper grammatical context, but the point is that he knew it was bullshit, and he told them that it was not true. He went there and investigated, Joe Wilson did. He came back, he told the CIA what he found, which was not only no evidence that it happened, but plenty of evidence that it didn't, and that the whole thing was lies. And the vice president's office, and the president himself, also, we can see from the timing of different classification, declassification orders and so forth that he signed, They engaged in this criminal conspiracy to out this CIA agent to make it look like the wife, to make it look like she, the CIA agent, had basically come up with this boondoggle for her husband, all expenses paid vacation to Niger, to try to blunt the effect of Joe Wilson coming out and writing What I Didn't Find in Africa in the New York Times and going on CNN and other places and telling people, look, not only did Saddam not try to buy uranium from Africa, but they knew that he didn't because I went there, investigated it, and I told them. And this was big trouble. And so they engaged in this criminal conspiracy to out this guy. So, you know, basically what I'm talking about is this thing's an onion, and Scooter Libby is just the very outside layer. Inside is, it ain't quite treason, because Israel's not an enemy of the United States, but it is, you know, basically a foreign policy on behalf of a foreign power. And, you know, I guess you can consider Lockheed a foreign power, too. But it's definitely wrong. And let me tell you something else, too. You listen to these war party Stepford radio show hosts, is what Charles Goyette calls them, and it sounds good to me. And the rest of these neocon talking points, yeah, but it was Dick Armitage who leaked the name to Bob Novak. Yeah, but it was Dick Armitage. What a red herring. So what? It was Dick Armitage. You know how Dick Armitage knew? Because Scooter Libby called the State Department, called the CIA, and said, we want to know all about this Wilson guy, everything about him. Requested that the CIA come up with the file, and the State Department got a copy. That's how Armitage saw it. Novak is in the news today saying, oh, come on, he wasn't, you know, deliberately revealing anything to me. We were joking around. It was an aside. He even said to me, boy, this sure does sound just like Evans and Novak stuff, right? A CIA agent named Valerie? They were just BSing on the phone, says Novak. Well, I think that's true. I don't think that Armitage was part of any criminal conspiracy to out this lady. Armitage was the Assistant Secretary of State who saw the classified documents that the members of the criminal conspiracy to out the CIA agent had come up with in order to do their dirty work. That's how he knew. That is irrelevant. As Justin Raimondo wrote, what, 2 years ago or something, Rovegate, who leaked to the leakers? Yeah, Karl Rove, yeah, Dick Armitage. How did they know? Vice President Cheney, George W. Bush, his underling, and his other underling who's actually capable and can tell you the difference between a decade and a century, Scooter Libby. They are criminals. And I'm glad Bush pardoned Scooter Libby or commuted his sentence. I'm glad. I never really believed he was going to go to prison anyway. Thought there was a chance. But, you know, as recently as the day last week when he was given his prison ID number, somebody said, ah, look, he's going. There goes his prison ID number. I said, yeah, let me know when they slam the cell door shut. We'll see. But I'm glad that Libby got his sentence commuted. Because the fact, my friends, the fact of the matter is that America's government is not a government of laws. It is a government of men. It is an unrestrained, torturing, kidnapping, mass murdering, aggressive warfare initiating, I know that's redundant, sorry, I'm trying to figure out a way to make everything rhyme with ing. These guys are criminals. There's no rule of law in this country. When they put you on trial and lock you up, that wasn't really the law. That was they fucking felt like it. And you're helpless. That's what it was. And if they cite some words on a piece of paper, well, you got lucky. And if somehow your lawyer, you know, got you into a courtroom where a judge would actually let you off because the law comes between you and the state, well, that's a miracle. That's a miracle. But the law does not apply to the government, and we all know it. And it's time for us to all stop lying to ourselves and to each other and to our kids and to our friends and neighbors. No, the law does not apply to the government. The government can torture and murder and kidnap and initiate aggressive warfare against anyone they please, and you can't do a thing about it. And if an aide to the President of the United States is guilty as hell of perjury and obstruction of justice in preventing a federal investigation into a criminal statute violation, an investigation that was begun at the request of the CIA, well, then, no, he just gets off, man. I guess he's going to have to get the millionaire actor Fred Thompson to pay his fine for him. $250,000 is chump change to Scooter Libby. Shit, I don't even know if he even needs Fred Thompson to help pay his legal bills. He's got Mark Rich. But wrap your head around that concept and understand it. You live in a tyranny. You live in a land where they can kidnap you, they can torture you, they can put you in front of a military tribunal and have you shot. You live in a country where they lie to justify aggressive war. You live in a country where your president signs orders saying, torture these people. And have a good time as long as their organs don't fail. As long as they don't die. But even then, if they do die, we know that you meant well. And that you were trying to stop a greater harm. So therefore, it's okay even if you murder people. Which, Bush signed that shit, okay? Bush's signature is on that. As long as your lack of torture is consistent with military necessity, by all means, don't torture people. But, what's that you say? Military necessity? Oh, fine. Go ahead. Freeze the guy almost to death and then sick dogs on him. And then beat him. And then hang him upside down. And then beat him some more. And then sick dogs on him some more. And then freeze him again. And stick things up his ass. As Seymour Hersh reported in the New Yorker magazine, force him to have sex with his son at Abu Ghraib prison. God, I'm proud to be an American. I'll tell you what. 646-6446-646-6446 if anybody wants to get in on this madness. There is no rule of law in the United States of America. John Adams was wrong. Let's be honest. John Adams was lying when he said that this was a government of laws, not men. Never has been. It certainly isn't now. So, there you go. You know, for all you 7th grade, 8th grade civics teachers in the audience, do your students a favor. And explain to them that there is no rule of law in America. Police can run red lights all they want. Police can shoot people to death. In the back. All they want. All they want. The president, the vice president, and their aides can engage in a criminal conspiracy to lie this country into war and to, violate even more laws in fighting back against the people who expose them. And then they can just turn around and pardon them. I imagine the conversation went something like this. Hey, Scooter. Don't go along with them, man. It's okay. You can commit any crime you want. I'll pardon you. And it's funny, you know, it wasn't too long ago. Somebody else brought this up. I forget where this morning I read this. But, yeah, forget it. It's not worth it. Next topic. I'm over it. Rule of law. Let's talk about the UK doctors. Some people were posting up on my blog. Oh, inside job, false flag operation. Possibly, I don't know. I guess there were some reports that said that nightclubs had gotten a warning that they might get bombed in the past couple of weeks. So perhaps British intelligence did know something and didn't do anything. And perhaps at the end of the day, the crazy jihadists who recruited these doctors to do what they did, assuming they were really recruited by anybody, was a government informant. I wouldn't be shocked. But to think that anybody would panic or, you know, give up their rights because two car bombs failed to go off and another guy succeeded only in burning himself and wrecking his car is troublesome to me. Now, what if there was an actual attack of, you know, people really dying? What are you going to do? Are we going to let them just tear up the Bill of Rights right there on TV? The Spotlight article today on antiwar.com, the guy talks about the brave courage, how the media keeps talking over the brave steadfastness and spinal fortitude of the British people, that they went on about their day, went to work, continued working in their garden, did their job, picked up their kids from school, even though not 30 miles away, two cars were towed. Yeah. And I don't know how bad the British TV has been. The papers have been a bit hysterical, I know. But not nearly as hysterical as American television. And, you know, the argument, of course, is that as long as they go, oh my God, there was a car bomb that didn't go off, and if it had, it would have caught on fire, and that would have been real scary. All day on TV. Apparently, that's what sells. Apparently, that's what Americans want to watch. Apparently, that's what makes advertising rates climb up on the chart. Oh my God, oh my God. Two car bombs failed to go off, and if they had, they wouldn't have done any damage anyway because the people who built them were complete idiots. It becomes the biggest deal in the world. Well, I'll tell you, I tuned it to the TV to see what happened. Oh, okay, towed a car away, huh? Yeah, that looks pretty scary. And then about 2 minutes later, I realized, oh, I get it. This is going to be it all day, huh? Click. I turned it off. It's not like they had any new information. It was just a bunch of hysterical women who are not journalists. You know, 99% of the TV news anchor men and women. Now, 90% of them are just anchors. They're not really reporters at all. But they have this, you know, MSNBC, Fox, CNN, all of them had this new crop of lady reporter or, you know, pseudo reporter anchors hosting the news that I've never even seen before. For all I know, they're, you know, specialists in the Army propaganda division at the Pentagon. Sitting there going, oh my God, oh my God. You know what's really terrible is that the police in America don't have the ability to X-ray vision scan with the most sophisticated technology in the world every car in the country. What are we going to do if we can't see through the steel on the outside of people's cars? What are we going to do if we cannot inspect the inside of every American automobile? My God, we're all going to die, says the lady on the TV news. That's what sells? I mean, I can see if you want to make fun of them and you want to get sound bites off it. I don't even have the patience for that, obviously. I can only sit here paraphrasing. But who is sitting there riveted by this? Oh my God! Somebody tried to set off a car bomb that if it had gone off, it wouldn't have done anything but burn the car? Holy crap! I think it's the same article that we're running in the Spotlight. That's the Spotlight on antiwar.com today, where he says, you know, if this had happened in Afghanistan, two car bombs failed to detonate, third maniac succeeds in burning himself to death, it would have been the best news they'd heard in Afghanistan in years. This weekend, two car bombs failed to detonate, and some idiot killed himself. Here's sports. And yet, oh no, oh, the world's going to end. The sky is going to fall, and when it hits you, it's going to blow you up. Can you imagine cars that could have actually burned? I'd like to give the MI5 and the MI6 guys a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. Surely if they were the ones who came up with this whole thing, they would have at least given these guys some explosives, no? I haven't read all the news about it, and I really should spend quite a few hours Googling the hell out of this thing and find out everything I can about it. I haven't done that yet, and I need to do that. But from everything I know so far, what they're talking about is the communist health system in Britain, which is absolutely horrible in so many ways. They went and hired near 1,000 foreigners, particularly in the Middle East, including a bunch of Iraqis. Apparently they didn't do any background checks, etc. And they hired some guys who wanted some revenge. Can you imagine? But they hate us. But they hate us and they want to kill us. Right, they do hate us. They do want to kill us. Why? Why? 72 virgins in heaven. Oh, I know. They hate the fact that it used to be the case that you have the right to be secure in your persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. You think that's why? Oh, no. It's because our governments killed their friends and family. Boy, that's difficult to understand. America is a world-spanning, murderous, torturous, aggressive, warfare-engaging, evil empire. Our government, the same one that you can't stand when they mess with you, but you want to mess with all your neighbors all the time, that same government goes around this world with absolute impunity, murdering people, murdering them, blowing their bodies apart with high explosives. That is why they hate us. That is why people are willing to even set themselves on fire, even kill themselves in an attempt to kill some Brits. And these guys, they left suicide notes. Why'd they do it? Iraq. That's why. Because Britain helped America invade Iraq. Second time Britain's invaded Iraq. First time they did a regime change there. First few times, I guess. Didn't really work out for the long haul. But now they're back in Iraq, and now they have terrorism. And guess what? The British are just a few years more grown up than us Americans, I guess. Because they don't scream and cry and put their fingers in their ears and scream "Mary had a little lamb" at the top of their lungs whenever someone tries to explain that America and Britain started it, that America and Britain hit first, that America and Britain's foreign policy is responsible for motivating these murderers to come to our countries and kill civilians in our countries. They don't do that in England. They look at terrorism in England, and they go, wait, was it the IRA? Because, of course, the IRA, they never had any real motives. They just hate us because we're free and so forth. But, wait, was it the IRA? Oh, no, it wasn't. It was some Arabs, huh? Well, obviously, they hate us for our foreign policy. Well, can you imagine what it must be like to live in a society of adults where, 6.5 years after September 11th, it's okay for people to say that foreign policy sometimes has consequences, that people who are so homicidal they're willing to give up their own lives to take some, could possibly have some earthly motivation other than just crazy beliefs drummed into them by their, unholy and satanic idol-worshipping leaders? Is it possible that when the guys crashed the planes into those buildings back in 2001, that they actually had an earthly motive? Could it be that they didn't do all that just for 72 virgins in heaven? Could you entertain the possibility? Well, you know, there's this this guy, Rick Beltram. He's the Republican Party chairman in Spartanburg County, South Carolina. Yeah, great name for it, right? Yeah. A little South Carolinian Sparta there. Well, Lou Rockwell's blogged on the Lou Rockwell blog. Imagine that. Republican official insults Ron Paul. Here's what Spartanburg County's South Carolina Republican Party Chairman Rick Beltram had to say about why he is excluding Ron Paul alone of all candidates from his county's functions. He can stay home. The door's closed for him. I'm not going to extend him an invitation to come here because he has managed to insult and in many ways abuse Republican activists with his strident lingo. Jesus Christ, dude. When he attacked Bush, that we created 9/11. That's an absolute lunatic talking. Uh-huh. Is that so right? Tom DiLorenzo, author of The Real Lincoln, apparently has written a letter to Mr. Beltram of the Spartanburg Republican Party. It says, Mr. Beltram, your personal smear of Congressman Ron Paul is the kind of thing that makes Northerners think Southerners are a bunch of yahoos and rednecks. Lunatic? Really? For quoting the 9/11 Commission report accurately? Something that Rudy Giuliani has obviously not even read? Which, you know, there's a lot better information out there than the 9/11 Commission report for why they hate us. Give me a break, although I guess that's the official one everybody wants to cite. Pardon me. DiLorenzo continues, don't tell me you believe Karl Rove's idiotic line that the terrorists hate our freedom. If so, what took them so long? We've been free for many generations. Why do they wait until 2001? The obvious answer is that they're outraged over our government's constant meddling in Middle Eastern affairs, especially in the years after the first Gulf War, which are none of our business. This is not to defend these murderers, but to confront reality. Something that Republicans like yourself seem incapable of doing, as blinded as you are by phony patriotism, i.e. blind faith in the GOP establishment. Congressman Paul did not blame us for 9/11. He accurately cited what even the CIA calls blowback, retaliation for our aggressive actions against them in their own countries. How long do you suppose we can send our military all around the world bullying everyone, even our allies, for reasons that have nothing to do with defending America? And I love this line. Tom DiLorenzo concludes his letter to Rick Beltram of the Spartanburg, South Carolina Republican Party. The only way America will ever become a free country again is if the Republican Party disappears along with the Democrats. Hey, you pretty much got that right. Well, Mr. Beltram backs down. Updated 10 a.m. this morning at the Lou Rockwell blog. After huge pressure from the grassroots, Spartanburg, South Carolina Republican Party Chairman Rick Beltram has quickly backed down from his promised exclusion and now offers this challenge to Ron Paul. We, the Spartanburg County GOP, will hold a low-cost event, cover charge, for attendees to have a public Q&A with Dr. Paul here in Spartanburg. No other candidates. This will be your time. This is all capitals here, this kook's writing. To convince us that we have incorrect information about Dr. Paul's political platform, exclamation point. This will cost your campaign $0, except for the cost to get Dr. Paul to Spartanburg, and if any overnight accommodations are needed, exclamation point again. Format, 10-minute opening presentation by Dr. Paul. 12 questions from the audience. To be pre-screened by us and your campaign. Meet and greet. Total, 1 hour. So there you go. This happens every time. These kooks try to marginalize Dr. Paul. Then the grassroots lets them know, in no uncertain terms, that their behavior is not appreciated. And in this case, unlike in the Iowa case, in this case, the guy backs down. Same thing happened with the head of the Michigan Republican Party, who tried to get Ron kicked out of the debates. In Iowa, they stuck by their guns out of sheer embarrassment and not wanting to have to backtrack. But of course, in Iowa, Ron Paul threw his own little shindig and had at least 400 more people than the tax forum thing that he wasn't invited to. That included, what, 6 or 7 or something of the rest of the Republican candidates. Ron Paul brought in more than the rest of them combined in Iowa. Where are the millionaires, man? Would somebody give Ron Paul some millions of dollars or something? Where the hell are you, Whole Foods guy? Where's Michael Dell and Bill Gates and never even mind them? They're all on government welfare by now. What about all the independent free market libertarian type computer people out there? There's, you know, what, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, well, tens must be at least 10,000 something internet millionaires out there. I have no idea how many. It's a lot. Kick down, man. It's not like Lockheed is going to come to their senses and say, you know, we'd really make a lot less money, but it would be the right thing if we only sold enough equipment to the American government for them to defend this country with. We better support Ron Paul before it's too late. That's not going to happen, see, the Lockheed money. And I don't think he'd take it anyway. But, anyway, Ron Paul's got a lot of support. And these jerks keep having to back down from their attempts to marginalize him and exclude him from Republican Party politics. And, you know, all the polls, and I don't mean to say they're wrong, because what the hell do I really know? I don't know. But all the polls put Ron at 2 or 3%, but they're asking Republicans. They're asking people who vote in Republican primaries in the past and so forth. I don't know if I really predict, but I would very much like to see, very much hope that many, many people from all around this country who have never voted Republican, are going to turn out in the Republican primaries to vote for Ron Paul. If you live in a state where you can't register that day, you better get on it. If that's what you want to do. But sooner or later, if only because of Dr. Paul's candidacy and his insistence on telling the truth to the American people, are we going to get the truth out? American foreign policy causes terrorism and doesn't defuse responsibility from the hijackers or the men who sent them on their mission. But there's plenty of responsibility to go around, and a lot of it falls at the feet of George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, and the thugs that carried out their policies. Most particularly, the persecution and occupation of the Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank, and the permanent occupation of the Arabian Peninsula. They're the ones who got 3,000 killed. They created the motive. And of course, none of the policymakers had to die in the attack. It was everybody but them died that day. A bunch of civilians died that day. I don't know if you guys have heard the tapes of the telephone calls from the towers. Help, we're stuck, we're trapped above the damage. It's smoky as hell. Where are the firefighters? Is anyone coming to get us? What the hell's going on? Regular people, man. Plain old guys at their job, not a government jobs, private sector jobs, engaging in voluntary transactions for a living and so forth. They're the ones who had to pay the price for William Jefferson Clinton's foreign policy, for his continued provocation of bin Laden and his movement, and his absolute refusal to do anything about the enemies he's creating. And Ron Paul's getting that point across, and more people are catching on to it. American foreign policy causes terrorism. That is a fact, Jack. And you know what? I just can't wait to see the footage of Ron Paul in South Carolina taking questions from a dozen members of the wannabe war party.
Hi, I'm an idiot. I learn everything I know from talk radio, so I don't know anything. And I'm under the impression that you're a traitor and you think George Bush did it and you like Osama bin Laden. What the hell? And then Ron Paul will say something to the effect of, well, you see, there's a thing called blowback. The unintended consequences of American foreign policies that are kept secret from the American people. American covert foreign policies. And when those unintended consequences blow back, dumbasses like you have no idea what happened or where it came from other than the clear blue sky. And then, because you don't know why it's happened, you're willing to believe the lies of the war party when they tell you that they hate us because we're free, they hate us because some jerk promised them that they would get to have 72 virgins in make-believe land after they die, or what have you. And that is the fact, and here's all my footnotes, and let me explain one more time for those hard of hearing in the back. As Tom DiLorenzo put it in this blog entry on LouRockwell.com's blog today, oh, really? If they hate us for our freedom, what took them so long, man? How come the Arabs haven't been coming over here and been committing suicide bombings against Americans all this time? They've had really good boats, you know? Airplanes, really fast ones, jet airplanes even. And yet somehow they couldn't get around to waging their holy war on America till the 1990s. Couldn't get their major attack on American soil accomplished till 2001. And they hate us for being free? Does anybody believe that anymore? I'm sorry, I'm probably just insulting all y'all's intelligence. I don't mean to do it. I can't wait to see Ron Paul in South Carolina, though. You go get him, Ron. You go school those idiots, man. They need schooling. Updating the Lou Rockwell blog here. The White House is caught doctoring a tape of Bush's mission accomplished speech. Cool. Well, I'll have to check that one out after the show, I guess. It's really cool, man, I don't know how cool it is. It's interesting to me. It's puzzling to me that you people, and I see you there on the server. You listen to this show for 2 hours a day. You're really, literally willing to sit there and listen to me talk for 2 hours. No guests. You can tell today I don't have any interviews lined up. No guests. You'll sit there and listen to me talk for 2 hours and yet you still won't call in. Seems like if you like this show that much, you'd have something to say. The number's 512-646-6446. If you feel like it. But, let's see. I guess I'll play a song for you and then we'll come back and talk about the new prime minister over there in, merry old England. Let's see here. I think I'll play for you ST. We'll be right back.
All right, more Ron Paul news here. I love this article in the Iconoclast News. The Stranger, Seattle's only newspaper. No, the Iconoclast is not the name of the news. That's the name of the damn article. The Stranger is the Seattle newspaper in which this article appears. The article is called "The Iconoclast GOP Candidate Catches On in Washington State." How did a Republican Texas congressman named Ron Paul become a darling of the Washington State meetup scene? It all began, oddly enough, with a Democratic Senator Maria Cantwell and a stance she took against the international sex trade. In 2004, Cantwell became a prominent voice behind the International Marriage Broker Regulation Act, which was intended to fight human trafficking, mail order brides, and the like. This highly displeased Adam Berman, 40, of Gig Harbor, who runs LatinLoveSearch.com, which he calls the largest free Latin-themed dating website on the internet. His site is about love connections, not human exploitation, Berman says, and it wasn't forced to go, free until after Cantwell's bill passed. The bill actually wasn't Cantwell's alone. It was introduced in the House by another Washington Democrat, Rick Larson, and it had strong bipartisan support. But Cantwell is a big name here in Washington State, and she's stuck in Berman's mind. Her anti-human trafficking agenda, which they dropped their quotes, I don't know why, involved describing people like Berman, people running pay sites that connect Americans with foreign lovers, as, quote, international marriage brokers. And when the bill became law, it imposed strict requirements on these brokers, mandating that they conduct criminal background checks on their American customers and then translate the results into the native languages of all foreign users. And the only way Berman could get around the new rules was to stop charging people to use his site, which he did, losing a huge amount of money in the process. As Berman was fuming about what Cantwell had done to his business, he noticed that Ron Paul, a Republican congressman from Texas, had voted against the bill. Paul, a physician, has earned the nickname Dr. No because of his refusal to support any bills that he feels aren't constitutional. And apparently Paul felt Cantwell's human trafficking law fell short. When Dr. No jumped into the presidential race this year, Berman, who has never been active in politics before, decided to do all he could to support the guy. Quote, "He's just against the federal government having so much control," Berman told me. "He's hitting home with people who are frustrated with what's going on." For a web-savvy character like Berman, getting behind Paul meant starting a group on Meetup.com for Paul supporters in Washington. He now heads three groups in Seattle, Tacoma, and Bellevue, with more than 300 members between them. That's almost as many Meetup supporters as Barack Obama has in Washington State, and more Washington Meetup members than Hillary Clinton, John Edwards, Rudy Giuliani, Mitt Romney, and John McCain combined. The online traction Paul is getting here mirrors a national phenomenon, thanks to his iconoclastic showing in the Republican debates, where he's been the only candidate to speak forcefully against the Iraq War and to come out clearly in favor of fiscal conservatism, limited government, and hands-off social policy. Paul's candidacy is exploding online, bringing him more total meetup groups nationwide than any other presidential candidate. Does meetup membership really matter? If you ask Howard Dean, the answer is yes. It was through meetup that Dean's surprise internet support began to take off in Washington and around the country in 2003, the year that the internet first emerged as a platform for launching non-mainstream candidates into mainstream viability. And as a gauge of potential online donors, Paul's meetup numbers are huge. There are rumors that he may have pulled in $4 million online during the most recent fundraising quarter. Paul's actual fundraising numbers for the quarter won't be released until July 15th, but if the rumors prove true, he will vault from being an entertaining Republican asterisk to, well, being an entertaining Republican asterisk with a good chunk of cash and a lot of online supporters. As Dean showed, that doesn't necessarily transform a person into a winning candidate, but here in Washington, the Paul meetup contingent is optimistic. He was at a roundtable pizza in Tacoma on July 2nd, communing with Paul's supporters. The next day, another meetup group gathered in the food court at the Crossroads Mall in Bellevue, and Berman is planning a huge Ron Paul presence at Hemp Fest. Paul has opposed federal raids on medical marijuana operations in states that allow medical marijuana based on states' rights principles. He's also for industrial hemp as well. Paul's candidacy, Berman says, is growing like wildfire because of a crossover message that's able to escape the party line. Paul himself likes to put it this way: freedom is popular.
In independent-minded Washington State, it's no surprise that this message would be appealing to anti-war lefties, libertarians, and frustrated conservatives alike. People who applaud Paul's votes against the Iraq War, against the Patriot Act, against gun control, and against raising taxes. The guy's definitely a phenomenon that most people haven't seen, Berman says. Go, Ron, go. Kick their ass, man. I'm so proud of Ron Paul. I've been a fan of Ron Paul for so long. He is doing such a great job. And, you know, I see him on TV when he does these interviews, and he doesn't look like it's wearing him out at all either, man. He's just going strong. And I'd have to say that, you know, 19 out of 20 of his interviews go absolutely spectacularly. There have been a couple of times where I went, oh, gee, I wish that could have gone a little bit better. But no, seriously, like, Ron Paul is kicking ass. And it's because of the message, and it's because of him, too. Because, well, you know, George Bush and the rest of these kidnapping, torturing, aggressive war-initiating murderers, they like to talk about freedom, too. But people can tell that Ron Paul really means it and even understands it. And isn't a liar. And when he says, I want a humble foreign policy, oh, he really wants a humble foreign policy. He wants to end the empire. Some guy asked Ron Paul on TV a couple of weeks ago, why are you running for president? He didn't miss a beat. He answered simply, because I want to restore the republic. This empire is bad business. We are ruining our country. We're losing our freedom. We're going bankrupt. And I want to set things right. And you know what? There's a lot of people in this country who want things set right. And for those of you who fall in that category and aren't familiar with Dr. Paul, I'll just recommend to you that you could do some Google searching. Dr. Paul's a writer, too. That's what's great. You go to antiwar.com/Paul. You can read anti-war articles by him dating back to 2001. Maybe before. Dating back to 2000, 99 even, I think. Ron Paul's been writing for antiwar.com this whole time. And if you go and Google and go to his congressional website, you can read all his speeches. The guy's written books. You really want to know what the guy's about, you read, sorry, Mr. Franklin, we're all Democrats now. Which is, of course, a reference to Benjamin Franklin's statement that the Constitutional Convention had come up with a republic if you can keep it, which is actually a title of another one of Ron's long speeches slash short books. Hell, you really want to know about Ron Paul, go to antiwar.com/Paul and look on the right side of the page and see the article on patriotism. And embedded right there at the top of the article is the Google video of Ron Paul giving the speech on patriotism on the House floor. It's truly something to behold. He's the American Cicero, man. There's nobody else there who's willing to say what Ron Paul said. You know what else is funny? The guy's, he's being interviewed on National Public Radio in New Hampshire, I think. And, you know, it's a local, kind of moderate, Democrat, liberal interviewing him. And interviewing him about healthcare. And Ron Paul's making the case for a radically free market in healthcare, as opposed to socialism. And he complains that the current system of American healthcare is, basically, and you know how Ron Paul, he doesn't talk like me at all. He's such a meek kind of personality. He says, well, you know, what we have now is basically a fascist healthcare system. This is, what we have now is basically fascism, and that's bad. We need to move toward free markets. And the guy doing the interview went, excuse me, did you just say fascism? Wait a minute, you're a Republican presidential candidate accusing the status quo of being a fascist system? Holy crap. Now, I don't know if he, you know, made a free marketeer out of that guy, but he sure did stand out. And now, yes, well, why would Ron Paul call our healthcare system a fascist healthcare system? Oh, because that's exactly what it is. That's what fascism is. That public-private partnership. That's fascism. When the government controls the property that is ostensibly yours. And the most powerful of the property owners own the state and use all that force for their own interests. That's fascism. It doesn't have to be gray uniforms goose-stepping down the street. It doesn't. And America's healthcare system is exactly a fascist healthcare system. And can you imagine another president, another presidential candidate, willing to describe the status quo in America on any subject as fascism? I guess you can imagine like radical left-wingers talking that way. But to a radical left-winger, everything's fascism. Although, you know, to an individualist, anarchist, capitalist, private property advocate like myself, I'm basically with him. In fact, I once argued with an anarcho-communist friend of mine, or anarcho-syndicalist, or whatever they call themselves. And I says, hey, look, socialism with a police force is communism. And he says, oh, yeah, well, capitalism with a police force is fascism. And I said, oh, yeah, I guess you're right, huh? All right. Touche, bro. You got me. But can you imagine anybody but Dr. Paul referring to the current status quo on any issue as a fascist system that needs to be changed? Now, Giuliani, I could see him praising the American system as fascism. You know, I could see him being the champion of American fascism. But, you know, Ron Paul's the kind of guy who opposes that sort of thing. So they might be willing to both talk about it, but it's kind of different. You know, this show would be a lot better if I had a sense of humor. I think I do. A lot of times I laugh at stuff. But I sure don't sound very funny in my own ears here. It's anti-war radio. It's about kidnapping and torture and murder, and that's not okay. And it's not the kind of thing that makes me happy. Well, you know, I've got quite a bunch of stuff on my list here. I think I'm going to try to narrow it down to Lebanon and Palestine for the last half hour of the show here. But, yeah, what the hell, I ought to go ahead and play a song first, right? It's more or less the bottom of the hour. Song playing time. Radio Chaos 95.9 Austin.
Ensemble burial to be. Corpses rotting through the night in bloodless misery. Scorched earth, the policy, the reason for the siege. The pendulum, it shaves the blade, the scraping air blood rage. Support the war.
Richard Cheese covering Slayer. And I see here on thestressblog.com, Steve C, who apparently, what, doesn't have a telephone or something? I don't know. He, sorry, man, I'm just playing. He writes in the comment here, I got the show today. Scott, you're talking around the thing, sovereign immunity. You've described it to a T, but I've never heard you use this term. That's essentially what you're getting at. No, that's obviously he's talking about my little rant about Scooter Libby and how the law does not apply to the state. And yeah, that's right. I guess the reason that I didn't come up with the term during that discussion, Steve, was because, well, sovereign immunity, as much as a disregarding of the law as it really is, it's actually something in the law. And basically, I was making the case that, you know, our government has de facto sovereign immunity. Go ahead and commit crimes, even if the Justice Department and a jury dare stand up to you, you'll get pardoned. De facto sovereign immunity. Because, of course, there's nothing in Scooter Libby's job description that gives him sovereign immunity. It's not like he's a member of the hostage rescue team who just blew a lady's head off as she held her baby daughter in her arms, like Lon Horiuchi. Now that's sovereign immunity. Well, yes, I blew the unarmed woman's head off as she held her baby in her arms, but I'm a federal agent, so fuck you. That is sovereign immunity. When the Idaho authorities attempt to indict a member of the hostage rescue team for murdering one of their citizens, and the Justice Department comes and says, oh, no, sorry, we're federalizing your case. Yes, we're going to determine whether Vicki Weaver's rights were violated, because, of course, the Bill of Rights is a mandate to the national government now, rather than a restriction against their power. And so, yeah, I'm sorry, Idaho, we're not going to let you prosecute Lon Horiuchi. We're going to move this thing to federal court and then dismiss it. Because Lon Horiuchi, who went on to help slaughter the Branch Davidians to death about a year later, after the Ruby Ridge incident, he's got sovereign immunity. He's allowed to murder people as long as he's on the clock. It's sort of like the torture memos that Bush signed that said, look, even if you torture someone to death, we know that you meant well. It really says that in there. But, no, you know, I don't know. I really need to brush up on my English history. It's kind of been a little while. But the way I remember the story was Charles I was a real son of a bitch. And he went around telling everybody, yeah, I got sovereign immunity and you can't do anything about it. And so they held him down and they cut his head off. And they said, no, King of England, who no longer has a head, you don't have sovereign immunity. You're dead now. That was in the British Empire that America declared its independence from. That was under the rule of men that our government, our historical old states seceded from to create a system of government by law rather than men in its place. Charles I, I've got sovereign immunity. The people of England, no you don't. Thunk. And I don't know if it was a sword or if they used the French guillotine model or exactly how it was they went about cutting the man's head off. But once his head was cut from his shoulders, he wasn't the sovereign king of England anymore. He was a dead, rotting corpse. And sovereign immunity is an idea which was supposedly rebuked way back then, even by the time of King George, really. And as Anthony talked about on the show yesterday, that was a big part of the revolution. It wasn't just the 1% taxation. It was the hypocrisy of the British government with this system of law to protect liberty for people on the rainy old island. But if you're a foreigner under their domination, forget about it. You're doomed. But yeah, sovereign immunity. Steve, you're right. That's basically what it is. In the case of Libby, it's de facto sovereign immunity. It's okay to violate any law you want, as long as you're the government. And, you know, I feel it's so important to make that point to people all the time, that the law does not apply to the government, that they can kill you if they feel like it, and yet I really do kind of fear that some asshole is going to listen to my show and think, you know, that guy's right. I really should go get a job working for the government. Why would I work in the private sector when I could get in trouble for murdering people, when all I got to do is go work for the cops and I can murder anyone I want and never get in trouble. I'd hate to inspire that. But I guess I figure that, you know, the information's out there, then people make the right decision and, you know, change things and all that. That's what political speech is for, right? And don't think I'm kidding. The cops can murder you and get away with it. They can. It's simple. Here in Austin, Texas, the police are cowards, dude. They're cowards. They only shoot unarmed people. A lot of times in the back. Sometimes while they're sleeping in their homes. I don't know of, and I could be wrong, I might have missed one or two. But as far as I know, the cowardly collective of guilt that is the Austin Police Department have not shot an armed assailant to death in the 21st century. I guess I really should go back Googling that. There may be an exception or two, but it's been at least a couple of dozen people murdered by the Austin Police Department in the last 7.5 years. Murdered. And you know how many of these cops have gone to jail? None. And you know how many even got indicted? Well, maybe one, but then it was later dismissed. I don't even think they got indicted. If you want to be a murderer, the Austin Police Department is hiring. And yeah, I do think you're all cowards, Austin Police, who may happen to be listening to Chaos Radio today. If you weren't a coward, you would take your chances in the free market. You'd take your chances having to actually produce a good or a service that somebody wants from you. But instead, no, you have to go work for the government that forces us all to pay you whether we want your services or not. And that's because you are too cowardly to compete in the private sector. Maybe it's because you know you're a stupid, worthless piece of shit who only wants to murder people and knows that you can't murder people as a Stanley Smith or Burns security guard. If you're a Burns security guard and you murder someone, you could get in trouble. So maybe that's why you're cops. Because you just want to murder people and get away with it. Is that it? Is there any other reason for someone to join the Austin Police Department other than wanting to murder people and get away with it? It ain't for the honor. Oh no, it's certainly not for the honor, since there is none. Let me ask you this. If one cop murders a person right in front of another cop, you think it's ever happened in the entire history of the state of Texas? Shit, or for that matter, this entire country? That the partner went ahead and arrested his buddy who just murdered somebody? Hey, you just committed an act of homicide. You're under arrest. Has that ever happened? I know a guy who only recently became a Travis County sheriff. He works in the Travis County jail. And I'm here to tell you right now, I know for a fact that if he witnessed another guard beating a Travis County inmate like a prisoner at Abu Ghraib, he would not arrest them. If anything, he would report it to his superior and say, I thought I ought to report this to you, and nothing would happen. But I don't believe for a minute, I don't believe that there is a single Austin police officer out there, not one, who would arrest another Austin cop for murdering someone. You know why? Because I think all Austin police are cowards. Hiding behind their little shields, collecting their massive taxpayer salaries far beyond what the market would bear for the insanely pathetic so-called security services that they do not really provide. If you're not cowards, why don't you come out from behind that shield and go get a job in the private sector competing in the free market like everybody else. Like all the people whose money you steal to pay your $80,000 starting salaries. I know, it's because you're a bunch of bitches. That's why. Austin Police Department equals cowards. Murderers. I hope I didn't hurt anybody's feelings. I hope there's not a hit out on me now. Lord knows the Austin Police Department has absolute, total, and pure, probably, you know, on the books, and is no doubt de facto sovereign immunity. They can murder anyone they want. Sure hope they don't kick in my door and murder me in the middle of the night now. Well, boy, we heard you said we were cowards, so we all dressed up in our body armor and got our gigantic steel shields. And now we're coming to all 25 of us are going to kick in your door and point German machine guns in your face. And if you so much as sneeze, we'll put bullets through your body. If you so much as sit up on the couch you were sleeping on, we'll kill you. They're brave, man. They're like the Green Berets, the Austin Police Department. They'll kill you sleeping in your bed. They'll shoot you in the back running away from them. And they'll get away with it. And you know what? Here's something you don't get to hear very often, folks. So listen up good. I agree with Tom DeLay about, I think, one thing. And that is that Ronnie Earl, the district attorney in Austin, Texas, is a piece of living shit. Is less than a human being. Made his career prosecuting an innocent 11-year-old girl over and over again for a crime that he knew she did not commit. I'm speaking, of course, of Lucretia Murray, who was innocent and who was prosecuted over and over again by that felon, Ronnie Earl. And, of course, you know, what Ronnie Earl wants is what's best for Ronnie Earl. And what's best for Ronnie Earl is never, ever, ever, ever asking a Travis County grand jury to indict a cop for murdering somebody. That's not right. I think there was one where he said, well, I don't think that the guy should go to jail, and I sure as hell ain't going to do a good job prosecuting the thing I promised. But, this one was iffy enough that I thought, you know, we ought to go ahead and let the grand jury decide whether to go ahead and do this. But, you know, every other time, I think there was one exception like that. Every other time, Ronnie Earl goes to the grand jury and he says, well, a cop killed somebody, but he was a cop, and that's okay, right? And the grand jury says, that's right, and the cop is no billed. And that's because Ronnie Earl is a piece of shit. He is an aider and abettor of murder, and he belongs in a cage along with all the innocent people he's prosecuted for whatever bogus offenses. Piece of garbage, Ronnie Earl. Right up there with Dick Cheney in terms of filth, in terms of corruption in power, in practice. Piece of garbage, Ronnie Earl, and the Austin Police Department murderers he protects. Boy, do I have a chip on my shoulder about that. And I'm not even a black guy. Can you imagine what it'd be like to be a black guy and to notice that, hey, all these innocent people who keep getting shot to death by the APD that the radio guy's referring to, yeah, they're all black. They don't shoot unarmed white people to death. They just shoot unarmed black people to death whenever they feel like it. And exercise their de facto or official, whichever it is, sovereign immunity that they have. You know, that's straight out of the Declaration of Independence. One of the accusations against the king. Protecting his soldiers by mock trial for any murders they commit against the inhabitants of these states. Does anybody believe there's a rule of law in this country? Is anybody dumb enough to believe that there's a rule of law in this country? When everyone from the lowest level Austin Police Department rookie all the way to Dick Cheney and everyone in between in government employ can do anything they want to anyone they want and never ever suffer consequences? Does anybody believe that there's a rule of law and not of men in this country? I think you'd have to be a fool. I think you'd have to have the intelligence of, say, a president who thinks a 100-year time span is called a decade. I think that's how stupid you would have to be. And even he knows better than that. All right, I'm sorry. Once I get talking about how much I hate police. Hey, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm going to keep going on that. You know why I hate police so much? When I was a little kid, I watched Mr. Rogers when I was four. These are the people in your neighborhood. In your neighborhood. In your neighborhood. Yeah. Hi, Mr. Sheriff. This is me as like a first grader, second grader walking home from school and the sheriff, county sheriff's deputy drives by. Hi. These are the people in my neighborhood. And yet the first time I ever actually had to deal with a cop, when I was 12 or 13 years old, I was treated like, well, Ronnie Earl, in the sense of like I was less than a human being. Like I was a goddamn dog, and not the way a decent person treats a dog, but the way some whiskey-drinking, drunken asshole treats a goddamn dog. That was my first experience in dealing with police. And I remember even asking him, "Excuse me, sir, can I ask you one question? Doesn't your guy's job depend on the people respecting you? And how do you expect us to respect you when you treat us like goddamn dogs?" I probably didn't phrase it exactly that well, but pretty close. And the answer I got was something along the lines of, "You shut your mouth, you goddamn dog." And so you know what? I've hated cops ever since then. And I know all cops are individuals. I know some cops are a hell of a lot more decent than other cops. I know some cops exercise their discretion in favor of people's liberty. Sometimes. But as a whole, it's a corrupt institution. I mean, whoever came up with the idea of we all ought to have one security force that we can never fire and that has access directly to our bank accounts? Just sounds stupid on its face to me. And by the way, they don't provide anybody any security anyway. But, you know, little advice to a rookie cop out there. If you would like to be treated with respect by the people in your community, it's too late for your partners. We already hate them because they've already treated us all like goddamn dogs before. But, you know, for you, rookie cop out there, you want to try to get by, make your way in the world, hopefully, you know, keep on the good side of the population. Yeah. How about not murdering people? How about if you have to stop a 13-year-old kid on the sidewalk skateboarding, that you don't treat him like less than a human being and create an enemy for life out of him? Because you see what these Williamson County pigs did to me. I just spent 40 minutes talking about how much I hate you. And there's new cop-hating people created every day by the actions of the cops in this country. Hell, I read a blog entry this morning somewhere, I forget where, that said, last night, 4th of July, Independence Day, the day we celebrate our freedom for one day. The cops came, multiple cops, and gave this guy the third degree for water balloons. And then finally left. And then later came back, trespassed on their property, shined their flashlights in the windows of the guy's house, looking for evidence of illegal firecracker setting off. What? That's a misdemeanor. And when these guys got home, they said they went out to the beach or something, fireworks thing at the beach. And then, and I forget, I'm sorry, I'd give you credit, but I don't even remember whose blog it was. Maybe it was something I read off of the Tiny Revolution blog this morning or something. I don't remember. But anyway, these guys come home from the fireworks show, and the cops, there's four of them, trespassing on this guy's property, searching around for evidence that they'd set off some firecrackers. And, of course, treated these gentlemen like goddamn dogs throughout the entire time that they were dealing with them. And, you know, I don't know. I guess it takes a lunatic like myself to follow the logic to its natural conclusion. We ought to abolish all the police forces in America. Duh. Oh, I know. I'm the crazy one, right? You people all think that we all should have to pay for security services from people who don't provide security, who can murder whoever they want, who never have to obey the same rules as us, and that we ought to all be forced to pay for them, and we ought to all never be able to fire them. And you're the ones who are realistic and intelligent, not me. Crap, I got 3 minutes. Real quick, Prime Minister Gordon Brown says there's no way that he's getting British troops out of Iraq or Afghanistan. So anybody had any hopes for that guy, forget about it. Although he did return the power to declare war back to the full parliament, which is, you know, at least some kind of progress. A tiny revolution. Goddamn. A tiny revolution. Jonathan Schwartzblock. No statute of limitations on impeachment. You can impeach him after they leave office, even. And there was something else I wanted to point out here on the Tiny Revolution blog. Oh, I know what it was. Damn it, man. And now it's probably, I don't have enough time. Where the hell is it? Here we are. All right, look. This is from June 28th, 2007. This is old. I'm sorry. It's at Jonathan Schwartz blog, A Tiny Revolution, and it's called NIR. That's N-I-R, as in Near Rosen. NIR, I mean, what are you talking about? And it's some transcript from Near Rosen explaining to some idiot named Roberts at CNN. Oh, that guy. Yeah, I know who Roberts is. Anyway, it's Near Rosen on CNN. Jonathan Schwartz writes, apparently there was a small glitch in the Matrix which allowed Near Rosen to appear on CNN. And what he said is, America's not trying to create peace in the Middle East. America's trying to create a civil war, and they've succeeded in creating a civil war in Gaza. It's all Americans' fault, and it's all, if not on purpose, out of absolute stupidity. But don't anyone ever forget that Israel created Hamas as a decent religious counter to those secular communists, the Fatah movement. And then they demanded that the Palestinians hold elections, and then Hamas won, and then immediately Israel and Egypt and America and Saudi Arabia began supporting Fatah death squads to go in there and start a war to try to overthrow Hamas. And of course it just blew up in their face like everything else, and they got themselves thrown out of power. And now Israel this morning, or last night I guess, began a reinvasion of the Gaza Strip. We'll see how far they go with that. Good luck to all you citizens of Gaza out there. Or I guess inmates of Gaza is more like it. Also, check out Vineyard Saker, S-A-K-E-R, vineyardsaker.blogspot.com. A good friend of mine, a fellow blogger from thestressblog.com. And he's got a great article here. Can you guess where the Fatah al-Islam roots are? And of course, the answer to that is easy. And yes, I can guess it. It's the redirection. Written by Seymour Hersh, explained the whole thing. America backing al-Qaeda terrorists in Lebanon against Israel's enemies, Hezbollah. That's right. America backing al-Qaeda against a foreign country's enemies that are not our enemies. There you go. So check out Vineyard Saker. And that's it. I went on way, way, way too long about how much I hate police, which is a lot. And so I'm sorry I didn't get to do a very good job covering the Middle East today. But anyway, man, this has been Anti-War Radio. I'll be back here tomorrow. In fact, this afternoon, I'll be recording an interview with the great Chris Floyd to play for you on tomorrow's show. So everybody tune in 11 to 1 Texas time on Radio Chaos 959 in Austin, Texas.
Please, but I won't run from you. Well, that's right, these are murder on my friends, and now what are you gonna do? Go ahead, try to push us around, and we'll beat you black and blue. Oh, it'll take any shit us passing from likes of you, yeah, you. Intimidation is your game, where you can also play. For me on end, all bad lines drawn, and it's you who's gonna pay. You think you're right, you think we're wrong, where time will show they tell. We'll never give in, we'll keep on fighting, gonna shove you back down your well Intimidation is your game, but the booze ain't surely for you to shame. Intimidation is your game, but the booze ain't surely for you to shame. Intimidation is your game, but the booze ain't surely for you to shame. Intimidation is your game, but the booze ain't surely for you to shame. I see. You see, there's spit on my face, but I won't run for new. But that's why these are all my friends, and now what are you gonna do? Go ahead, try to push us around, and we'll beat you black and blue. Oh, it'll take any shit us passing from likes of you, yeah, you. Determination is your game, where else you can also play. From here on in, the bad lines drawn, and it's you who's gonna pay. You're right, you think we're wrong, where time will sure they tell. We'll never give in, we'll keep on fighting, gonna shove you back down your well Intimidation is your game, but the bruiser sure ain't for you to shame. Intimidation is your game, but the bruiser sure ain't for you to shame. Intimidation is your game, but the bruiser sure ain't for you to shame.
Instead, the president spoke of a war that was won, the nation's long and bloody war for independence.
More than 2 decades later, it is hard to imagine the Revolutionary War coming out any other way.